Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
This is What's Next from Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name is Jay Moran. This morning, we're welcoming back Chandra Redford. Chandra is the CEO of the Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I said having us because the last time we got together was actually at your place.
You were.
On Main Street.
Yes, for the
ribbon cutting.
It's been about 2 years.
Yeah. Has it been that long already? Yeah. How is the new place working out for you?
The new place is great. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's working out well. We love the location. We have a lot of space. And there's been a lot of different things going on there. So.
Yeah, you guys never stop. Let's just, one of the reasons why you never stop. Because of need, right?
Yeah.
So what are you seeing right now, even maybe compared to 2 years? I know that was part of our conversation, and I think it will always be part of our conversation. But you have people who are the boots on the ground. They're seeing it and feeling what is really happening in our community. What is your sense right now?
You know, there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world in general. There's a lot of anxiety. People are really struggling. I think, you know, we love social media, we love having access, but it can be a lot for people. And I think it gives people a lot of time to think about, oh my goodness, well, what's going to happen next? And what about this? And then there are people that are really affected by certain things. Certainly, we know back in November, we had the issue with the SNAP benefits. And that was a great big panic. And I think what we saw is that people at that moment said, oh, wow, all of this stuff really affects me. I think it's hard for people sometimes if it doesn't hit them personally to really understand what's going on. But that's what we've seen. So we've seen people that are a little bit more aware, the issues with childcare. You know, that's a big thing for, you know, individuals that work. And so, you know, childcare is very expensive. And people who don't have childcare supports, they're not going to be able to go to work and make a living. And so that's another big thing. And so now you talk about more people that are going to have to rely on the system and services that are out there, which is going to make more demand on the human service field.
The demands never stop. As a matter of fact, maybe we can go into a little bit of history here. We were just talking about this before we went on the air that, you know, the Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers dates back to the 19th century. And in essence, where social work began.
Yeah, so we had our starts as two settlement houses, right? In the late 1800s, I think 1893 and 94, I think respectively, Westminster Community House and the Neighborhood House Association. And settlement houses were established to help the European immigrants to acclimate to this new country that they were in and to help them learn things, take the skills that they had, show them how they could make a living doing those things. And so you've kind of seen that progression throughout the years, right? And so they did that. And then World War II came and, you know, the GIs came home and people started to move. You had the Great Migration from the South. So the population started to change. And then it became more like, you know, what we call like neighborhood houses, community centers, where people were dropping in, needing things, you know, after school programs, things of that nature. And so BF&C actually BF&C as we know it today started in 1981.
Okay.
And that came out of the merger of the two settlement houses, Westminster Community House and Neighborhood House Association, both which we still own and we still run services out of today. But it just goes to show that, you know, no matter what time we are in, there are always unmet needs, right? And I mean, I think the needs are as great today as they were. They may be different in nature, but there's still a lot of need. So people still need after school programs for their kids, you know, somewhere for kids to go. They still need childcare. They still need food access. I mean, things are expensive. And unfortunately, if you have a family or if you're a person that lives on a fixed income, you run out of food sometimes, right? And you don't have enough income to just go to the store and buy what you need. So, you know, these are real issues.
You seem to have such a great understanding of the history of your agency, which is laudable. I mean, obviously, you've got a lot of things to worry about in the present day. But you mentioned the needs might be different. And I'm interested in maybe exploring that a little bit, because I always think that brings life into context a little bit, because, you know, we see movies and we read stories about the good old days and things along those lines. And maybe the problems of today don't get quite that that shine, so to speak.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of different equity issues that come into play. So you have different populations of individuals. I mean, we're still dealing with that today. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, based on your economic status or your ethnicity or race, you may have access to certain things or you may not, right? And so even when we look at healthcare, I believe it's a basic human need. Everybody needs access to healthcare,
right?
But not all people have that access, right, to healthcare. So it's not a matter of, say, you know, back then it was like, we need to get everybody this, we want to make sure they're vaccinated or things like that, right? Now it's like, well, we need to make sure that people are educated and understand and can get to this, and the people that are servicing them understand the differences in the culture. I think there's been a change from, you know, everybody coming in and acclimating, you know, to like, okay, we need to understand that everybody's different. Even if people look the same, they're different. We all come with a different story. And that story dictates how we access things in community at the end of the day. So I think that is something that is a little bit different. I think, you know, it's not as easy to say, hey, go out there and farm some land or something.
Right. Absolutely.
And grow some food. Let us show you. Now it's like, okay, let us show you how to shop and budget based on your income to get food. So it's different in that way. You know, I think whereas people were more hands-on back then, we are now a society that's more dependent, right, on someone to bring us our food in, and we have to purchase it. We're not actually growing it. Although we do have community gardens at BF&C.
Okay.
And so
we
do teach, particularly our youth, we teach them how to grow vegetables and to harvest those vegetables. And we've had programs where we teach people how to cook fresh vegetables. So, you know, we do those things because, you know, people, I think, sometimes we're not as innovative as we were back then. And those are important skills to have.
Yeah, I'll take this where I'll take it. And I'll let you pick up on it or let it slip past if you'd like. But it just, when you were talking about how we have changed, the world has changed. But, you know, one of the stories I think that has gotten overlooked in the last century or so is the fact that, you know, there were sharecroppers. There were sharecroppers who may not have been living, you know, a high standard of life, but had access to certain basic things, a certain type of shelter, certain access to food. Mm-hmm. Those sharecroppers, and depending on what research you're looking at, either were enticed off their land or perhaps forced off their land and ended up in cities. And we, you know, we see that today. And I guess what I'm getting at here is just, is that idea, like we were just talking about, I just kind of highlighted and you brought it up. Is that, do you think that's lost? And when people view, you know, the people who are really struggling in our society today, that they're missing that part, that there is a part of their existence ripped out, their heritage, their what they come from as a family.
Yeah, I think it's even further than that, right? I think, you know, if we really are going to have the discussion,
I was hoping you would.
It's about not having that sense of community.
Okay.
right? So I had the opportunity to speak. I was speaking with someone maybe a week or so ago, and they had taken a trip to Ghana. And they were talking about the sense of community and belonging there.
Hmm.
And how, you know, for African-American people, you know, that it can be very new because that's not really what we have here. And to the degree, like, they were explaining how, you know, there's a group of business people and they all work together, mm. right? They have different businesses, but it's like, I want you to be successful and let's help each other and let's embrace each other. And I think that as we've progressed in many ways, I think certain groups of people, we've lost that sense of community. And that is so important when you talk about success and you talk about not just survival, but thriving,
right?
That you need that sense of community. You need people that are going to lift you up. I mean, let's just face it. Like, if you can't take care of your children, right? If you have a community, you're going to they're going to figure out how to take care of those children while you go and you work and do whatever you need to do. And so if you think back, that's what people did, right? There wasn't like a sitter. There was like, you know, somebody in the neighborhood or, you know, I think about how I grew up. You know, I didn't go to daycare. There was always someone that could look after the kids or something like that. And I think that's what we're missing a lot of in every way and shape or form. So that is a key indicator of why things are so different. And so people have to rely heavily on these systems, right? Like, if you have communities of people who are like, let's get together and let's like do a garden of some sort, let's all reap from that garden, that's very, very impactful, right? In many ways, like for the environment, but then for that community of people, because you have people who are like, I don't know how to garden or whatever, but historically, right, we were taught some things. And I think that is missing. You know, I mean, you think about it. I mean, there's so many things. It baffles my mind that young people don't know how to sign their name in cursive because they've learned cursive writing. Right? And it's like, you know, and so I remember like teaching my nieces and nephews, like, this is how you cursive write. Like, like, it's, you need to know how to sign your name. You know, we're not going to go backwards, but we're going to like know how to write and read it, right? Because It blew my mind when I gave someone something, a young person something, and I wrote it in cursive, and they're like, I can't read this. And I was like, what do you mean you can't read it? But then I thought, like, and so there's all these things that I believe as a community we should really be instilling in our young people, but also each other, right? Because that's how we are going to be able to thrive and get through tough times. And that's what they did back there.
Right.
There was tough times, you know, like my great grandparents were sharecroppers, right? And so I remember my grandmother telling me the stories like, no, they all got together and it was hard and there was segregation. They were in Alabama, you know, but they all managed to do what they needed to do to make a living and to take care of their families and each other.
We are talking with Chandra Redfern, the CEO of Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers, and she has been kind enough to follow me off topic slightly here, but I think I think it shows something about the type of organization that you're with, that you have a feel for it. But I want to just follow a little bit more about that idea about community, and from where you sit, do you sense? I always like to wait to the end of the conversation. Do you have hope? But and I'm not necessarily looking. But do you see positive signs when it comes to building community, and or maybe do you see obstacles that are only going to be that need to be broken down to get more of a community sense?
Well, I'm an optimist, so
I had a feeling.
I see a lot of positive signs. You know, I think that's one of the things that I love about BFNC. That makes us a little different is that, you know, yeah, we're an organization, but we really love the fact that we're in community. We've always been in community and people look at us like family, right? And so I think that's a good thing because they feel safe. They feel like, you know, well, they don't know the answer. They're going to try to find the answer for me.
Right.
And I see a lot of that. So I think that's a good thing. I think people are starting to get it a little bit. I'll say it that way. They're starting to get it a little bit. So they're trying to figure out ways, like, how do we come together? You know, you see a lot of initiatives. You know, my only hope would be, like, let's not create all these little, you know, factions, but let's all come together because I think together is where we have impact. So hopefully we'll get there. But I have hope. I really do, you know.
Let's go into what were the settlement houses and what they are today and the other places that you that your organization is set up now. Take us inside. What will we see? Like you said, the let me maybe take us to the original settlement house over at, it's in the Fruit Belt, right?
Yeah. So we have one in the Fruit Belt, yep. And then we have one on Monroe Street. Mm-hmm. So Neighborhood House, which is in the Fruit Belt, it's located at 76 Orange Street, was a settlement house, and it's right there on Orange and Virginia, and okay. It spans Orange to Lemon.
All right.
And, you know, it was a place where people that have came to America came to get help. That's what it was. And it has continued to be that. It is a place now where the children go after school to get character education, to get mentorship, to be peer support to each other. It is a place where we don't call it it's people would say it's a food pantry. We call it a food share.
Okay.
We're sharing food with our neighbors. People come in, they select what works for them and their diets and their families. So it's not like you're getting a bunch of food that you don't eat. And we think of it as this is what we have. We're sharing it with you. And, you know, it's just generally, it's a good place. It's a different, you know, those people that I always tell people, like going into Neighborhood House is just a different feeling.
Really?
It just, you know, we have a lot of different sites and I love all of our sites. I do.
Of course.
But Neighborhood House is like, you just feel like I'm just at home and it's just comfortable and there are just people here that can help me, you know,
okay.
And I always have loved that about Neighborhood House. So, you know, you can stop in any day and people are there. People will greet you. They'll ask you what you need. They'll try to get you to the right direction or find someone that can help you. But it's that place. Now we have Westminster Community House, which is the other settlement house that we still have. And it's on Monroe Street. And so it's a little different in that it's the place where our older adult programs are.
Okay. All right.
So you may go there and you may find our seniors having lunch because we do the Stay Fit Dining Program there. You may see them partaking in some yoga with some soul music or something like that.
Wow. You've actually made yoga sound interesting to me.
it is very. We have a great instructor that we worked with, Mari Fox, and she works with our older adults and they do soul candy yoga to Motown music. So it's really great. You may get some computer classes. You know, we teach our older adults, you know, how do you stay connected? You know, it's tax season now. So there's a few days out the week where we're running our free income tax preparation program, which we've had forever. And that's just the BFNC portion. But if you go in the basement, there is a bank down there.
Oh.
There is a federally qualified health clinic down there. And there's also a beauty salon. So, so you can kind of go there and access a lot of things at that house.
So the individuals who go there are not necessarily living in the neighborhood?
No. So we don't live in the settlement houses anymore.
Yeah, right.
Because that's a great point to bring up. Yeah. Because originally, the people that ran the settlement houses actually lived there in the settlement house, like right there in the community. And so they would have all kinds of, they had women's group, men's group. I mean, we have some great photos somewhere in the agency that shows like these rooms full of women, rooms full of men, you know, kids playing on the rooftop because we have flat roofs. And back then they let kids play on the roof. So, you know.
I don't think you can get insured for that now.
Yeah, no, not today, but they did that back then. Yeah. And they just did like a lot of really great things there. But no, so no one lives there anymore. They really are more like community centers.
Okay, all right.
Is what they are.
Sure, sure. But open to anybody.
Open to anybody, you know, you can stop by, you know, if you're an older adult or caregiver, you stop by Westminster. We have youth services over at 76 Orange Street. Our food share is there. We have a community garden over there as well during the summer. So, yeah.
Why is it important to call it food share instead of a food pantry?
So I'm a believer that, you know, all of us at some point in time need some type of help, you know, okay. And it might not be like a resource help, but just some type of help.
Yeah.
And I think when you offer people help, you should do that with dignity. Right. Mm. And I just, you know, I've been around some years, but, you know, you think about the things like the lines for the cheese, the free cheese, and the free milk, you know, and I get it. Like, I get why they did things the way they did. But I think that you should be able to help people and people should be able to maintain their dignity. Because one of the things that when you talk to people, you know, one, they get tired of telling their stories all the time and, you know, being basically poked and prodded. It's like, you know, when you go to the doctor and they ask you the same thing 10 times, it's like, really, you have it in a file somewhere. But like, we can do things with dignity. And a lot of times with when there's pantries, it's kind of like, here's a bag of food, you know, let me see your ID, prove your income, all of these different things. And at the end of the day, you know, I look at it this way. I'm like, no, I don't want people misusing resources. But if you're making X money and you don't have food, like, you just don't have food, right? Like, people should be able to eat. And, you know, we're not going to take you through the ringer about, you know, why do you need this food? Why did you come here, you know, last month? Those types of things. And I think that people really appreciate that. And we want to be good neighbors. And so neighbors share food at times, right? And so we have a food share. We're neighbors, we're in the neighborhood, and we're sharing our access with you.
And as you were talking about that, I'm reflecting. I mean, there are ample locations inside the city of Buffalo, and obviously they're all around Western New York, that are food pantries. And we can move on beyond the naming of it. But I'm curious, like you said, in some places you might have to have some sort of ID. You might need some sort of proof. Do you, I think the answer is probably yes, but the idea that people might be going from place to place looking for food and might not be able to get it at certain places and might end up at your facility.
We've had people like that, you know, people that are like, oh, you know, they only, you know, here's the thing. If you got a family of four and you get like 6 canned goods and you know, some canned meat and a box of noodles, like, I don't know what that's going to do for people.
Sure.
So they might have to go from pantry. There are people that do that, right? Yeah. Because they're trying to eat. And, you know, it's not our job to make you feel bad about it. You know, my job is to, like, we're going to meet the need, and then we would love to be able to have a further conversation with you as to, like, why you need to use our services and let you know about other services that we have that may be able to assist you. And I think that's a much better approach than, like, making someone feel really bad about the fact that maybe they don't have baby formula, which is very expensive, by the way.
Right.
And not everybody can breastfeed. So, you know, it's like, hey, you need formula for your baby. And, you know, like that type of thing. So we see that a lot with people.
Let's take a time out and we'll come back with more. We're with Chandra Redfern today, the CEO of the Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers. A lot to talk about, of course, in terms of services here in the city of Buffalo and around Western New York for that matter as well. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
Public media keeps our community talking and thinking together. Hear perspectives that matter on BTPM NPR. Experience meaningful stories on BTPM PBS. Enjoy performances that connect us on BTPM Classical and discover new voices on BTPM The Bridge. These are conversations that shape our region and open our world. This is public media. Visit btpm.org.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. I'm Jay Moran here on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. Our guest on What's Next, Chandra Redfern, the CEO of the Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers. A lot to talk about. I appreciate the conversation we just had here because it's great to be with somebody whose job it is to understand what's going on, the realities that we face here in our city and our community as well. But you know, you guys are a lot of things now, right? And we talk about the history of being the settlement houses, but you guys are a lot of things now, to say the least. And you mentioned this before we went on the air, your integrated care outreach team.
Yes, yes.
Tell me about this.
So our integrated care and outreach team is a team of, at this point, three very talented individuals. And basically, they are the ones that if someone says, like, we're having an event, you guys want to do a tabling or something, they are there.
Okay.
So they are everywhere. I mean, everywhere.
Yeah.
But the thing that I also love about this team is, like, they are the, for many, the first access to BFNC. And so their role is really to talk to someone and then say, like, oh, wait, there's this, we have this service that could help you. Or did you know that we do this and that? And that's exactly what they do. In addition, because BFNC does participate in the social care network in this area, they work with people who receive Medicaid benefits. So individuals and youth, they work with them to get them services that are needed to address things that deter people from being their healthiest selves, right? That's how I say it. So if someone's homeless, they can help someone find housing. They will provide some transitional support for that. If someone needs food, they will help them with that. If someone needs an ID, I mean, like, you need ID now to do anything.
Right.
They will work with them to try to secure ID, you know, they will work with them to see what other services do you need, no matter what it is. And maybe BFNC doesn't offer it, but we have lots of provider partners that maybe do offer it. And they will link that person and then do what we call a warm handoff. So making sure that they went to the first appointment, following up, hey, how did that appointment go? That type of thing. And kind of get someone back on their path to navigating where they would like to be.
The outreach team, I'm interested in how you gauge their success. I mean, are you seeing them connecting you now, your organization, to more people?
So we do, right? So they have, you know, reports and things. And so they talk about the number of activities they went to, how many people they had contacts with, how many referrals they did. We look at how many referrals in-house they did and external. So we look at all of those different things to see, like, are we reaching where we want to reach, whom we want to reach, that type of thing.
What about the response? I'm wondering about it. You're not part of that team, but when they say, this is who we are, is there kind of like a, does it take a while to kind of really kind of bring people in with the idea that this place called Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers, or BFNC, does it take a little while to kind of to connect, or not really?
It doesn't. Why? Because people know BFNC, right?
Okay,
and BFNC has been in community.
All right.
And I think that's a great thing. It's that,
sure,
I meet people all the time that, like, were affiliated with BFNC before I was even at BFNC, and I've been there like 25 years, right? But it's wonderful. Like, I'll meet someone there, like, hey, my kid went to daycare there. Like, they've never had daycare while I was there, but at one point we did.
Right.
Or someone will say, oh, I had my first job there. So it's amazing the touch that BFNC has had in community, and people genuinely, like, really appreciate BFNC, whether it's, you know, they helped me get back on my feet, or they helped me get my start in my career, or they opened up my eyes to possibilities. So when the outreach team is in community, most of the time people know BFNC, and our outreach team is great. They're very engaging. One of the things that we do pride ourselves on is that we employ people that represent the community that we serve.
Okay.
So sometimes they're people that people know in community.
Okay.
And honestly, that's where we get a lot of our referrals. It's like word of mouth and things like that. So it's always kind of been that way. You know, people say, oh, you guys don't advertise a lot. Well, that's not really how we normally get the people that we provide services to. It's like people are like, hey, BFNC helped me out. Why don't you call and see if they can help you out? Or, you know, my son or daughter was linked with BFNC, or, you know, life happens and people will be like, yeah, I was linked with you guys like 10 years ago. And can you help me again, or something like that? So I think, you know, they're well received when they're in community.
And you have been there 25 years, and you didn't start off as CEO, that's for sure. And you can't, obviously you can grow within the agency, but what about in terms of keeping your labor force, your workers, your employees? I mean, are you finding this kind of the same level of, I guess I'll use the word burnout or churn that other similar healthcare related agencies are dealing with?
Yeah, so we do deal with the burnout issue, and I think, you know, the workforce is different, although I would like to say that I've seen some turn.
Okay.
So that's a good thing. but, you know, COVID did a number. Did a number on human services. I mean, you're talking about a field that was already, like, underpaid, overworked.
Right.
I'll be the first one to say it, right? Like, you do these jobs because you love the job, not because it's like you're going to make a lot of money, but because you love what you do, right? And COVID came and people could make more money doing something else, or they didn't want to be at work for a variety of reasons, right? I just don't believe you can work in human services and just be like 100% remote. Like, I don't really know how that works, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't work too well for doctors either. You know, I want to see my doctor, depending upon which doctor it is. And and so, like, you have to show up. You have to be present. So it's not work for everyone. But what I do find is that there are a group of people that are like, I really want to help other people, or they have lived in these communities that we work with, and they're like, you know, I want to help my people. I want to help my community. And so what can I do? But, you know, we have the same challenges everyone else has. Sometimes I think they're a little greater, you know, but we still manage. And I think it's because we do have a dedicated core group of people that just believe in the organization.
They have that sense that they're, you know, the whatever their function is within the organization, especially when they're out in the community or one of the locations, that they're making an impact. They feel that way.
Yeah, I think what I've found with this newer generation of employees, sometimes you got to help them find that, you know, because I think people come into this field and they're just like, I'm going to save the world and everything's going to be right. And life just happens, right? And it doesn't. You could do all this great work. You could set all these things up. And then, you know, blink of an eye, it's all undone because people live real lives. And you have to learn how to not take that personally. Understand that everybody's allowed to fail. Everybody's allowed to succeed, right? And you just take it at that, and that you've done all you could do. So I always try to say to people, like, have you did all you could do? Now, if you didn't do all you could do, there's a conversation we need to have. But if you did everything you could do, like, you can't ask anymore. And that's one thing my mother used to always say to me. She's like, did you do your best? If you did your best, what more can you ask of a person, right? And I just think in general, in the human service and the healthcare field, we got to look at it that way. So I do know we have people that come in, they're given 100%, and they show up every day. And I'm so appreciative of that. I really am.
And is there, again, one of those questions that's got a yes answer, I think, attached to it, but is there some heartbreak for those who choose to work in this field and work even at your agency as well?
There's heartbreak. I mean, you know, you see your share of people that, you know, relapse, people that die, people, you know, we've lost a lot of long-term clients, health-related issues, you know, life happens.
Sure, sure.
I was telling someone, some people, like, I've known them for my whole career at BFNC. I knew them before my career at BFNC because human services is small in this area. And sometimes people just really struggle, right? And they just never get over that hump. They may have had victories along their journey, but they just can never quite get to where they maybe wanted to be. So that is that can be very heartbreaking. And I think it's important to have your own outlet and take care of yourself, because it can be a lot. I see it a lot of times when people have their first loss, or, you know, something happens and, you know, there's a major catastrophe that someone made a different choice than what the worker thought. And, you know, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe they're homeless. Well, it happens, right? And it's, I think it's even more difficult when there's children involved.
Of course.
You know, it's hard for people. And so this work is not for everyone, because it can be an emotional roller coaster at times. And that's why, you know, we have EAP. You know, we probably have one of the most generous time off policies that I've known. I mean, most people come there like, wow, you have very generous time off. Because why? Because we can't pay people a lot of money, but we can make sure you can take the time off to take care of yourself, right?
So I mean, you almost sounded like you're in recruitment for a second there.
We're always recruiting.
Is that very always? Yes. I mean, seriously. So what's available?
People can always go to our website. Everything's listed there. But you know, we have some new programs. So we have our caregiver clubhouse program. So we're recruiting for that. Always recruiting for care managers, residential service providers, and the group homes. Those are hard because those are entry level. And I get it. And it's a lot because they're 24-hour facilities. Mm. And sometimes people don't know what they're coming into. You're coming into working in someone's home.
Right.
With 14 other people, you know, mm-hmm. so it can be a lot, but we're always recruiting for those. And then sometimes we have like some administrative support positions that are open. I think there's probably one or two of those open right now. But yeah, we always are generally looking to recruit because, you know, life happens. And for us, we have always known that for many, we are a first start on their career journey.
Right. Yeah.
And so people move on, right? But we still have to provide a service. So we like to be ready.
And in terms of qualifications, I mean, I guess it depends on
it depends. And it's all on our website. So right. We try to be as thorough as possible
in
our job
do.
Descriptions. But, you know, people can check us out at www.bfnc.org under careers and, you know, see all of our postings. But we have positions anywhere from high school diploma or GED up to, I think, you know, bachelor's, master's level. So,
and, you know, you mentioned the group homes, which is it's an interesting dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, not for everybody, but at the same time, it is for some people, isn't it? What sets those individuals apart, would you say?
You know, working in a group home is different.
Sure.
You know, I started my career in human services working in a group home.
Did you really?
At People Inc. Yes, okay. I did. I worked in an ICF, which was the highest level of care.
Uh-huh.
So I always remember we had a padded room in the house.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think there has to be that level of compassion, but you also have to be a realist about it. And you have to always remember you are working as a guest in someone's home.
Hmm.
And that it's very different from a hospital or a jail. So, you know, they're about care and control, right? They want to control the environment. They're going to care for the people and, you know, make sure you get your three meals and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whereas we're about our rehabilitation and recovery. And so that looks very different, right? Like you may want to create all this structure for people that, no, they don't want that. And so it's a balance and it's more of a partnership with the people that live in the house. And sometimes that's very hard for people, you know? And so I don't find that those people do well. And you're also dealing with people that have, you know, mental health diagnosis. And so sometimes they're going through stuff.
Right.
And they may say stuff or they may do things. And you can't be so easily offended working in a group home, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's just hard for people, right? But then there are other people that they love the fact that no day is the same, that they get to work right there in someone's home and watch someone progress. And those are the people that do well, people that are creative. And, you know, how do you teach someone to learn how to cook? It's not like that's just learn how to cook, but like, what's your favorite meal? Do you want to make it for the rest of the house? Like, let's go shop. Like, you got to be creative when
right.
you work in a group home. And so some people are better at it than others.
And being, I would think someone who would be better at it as well, someone who's just open to experience, maybe?
Open to experience, open to a lot of diversity. Well, I think in general, to work at BFNC, you have to be open to diversity. just open to experiences and maybe understanding that how you thought something should occur isn't the way it's going to occur, you know? And so I always say, like, as long as we get there, that's a good thing. We may get there differently, but we got to get there, you know? And so, yeah.
We're going to take one more time out and come back. We've got BFNC made some news recently, a nice grant from the Ralph Wilson Foundation. We're going to get into what that's all about and more about their services and more about our community. I think we have someone who has a real keen understanding of with us today. That's Chandra Redfern, the CEO of Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers, BFNC. This is What's Next on BTPM NPR.
Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR, brings you trusted, local journalism every day. Our reporters are in your communities covering the stories that shape Western New York and Southern Ontario. The issues, people, and decisions that matter. add national perspective from the BBC and Here and Now, and you are connected to the larger world without losing sight of home. Stay informed with reporting that you can trust on BTPM NPR.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media brings our community together with programs that inspire, inform, and entertain. Enjoy trusted news, local performances, educational resources, and cultural treasures all in one place. It's more than media. It's a connection to the world around you. Discover what Buffalo Toronto Public Media offers at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love. Listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media at the Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. I'm Jay Moran. We're glad to have with us on What's Next today, Chandra Redfern, the CEO of BFNC, Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers. I guess this goes into burying the lead, but you guys, I think it's relatively recent from the Ralph Wilson Foundation, mm-hmm. a very sizable grant for a very ambitious effort. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so we're super excited. We received a very large grant. It's over $1 million from the Ralph C. Wilson Foundation for our caregiver support program. And basically, there's two components to it. One is that we offer a short-term respite for caregivers. So respite is where they could bring their, it's an older adult respite. So right. they could bring their older adult that they're caring for, and that person will engage in activities or things like that. And that caregiver can then go out if they want and do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Shopping, read a book, whatever. Or what we have found is that they tend to stay and participate in the activities that we have. So that's really great. But the other piece of this is that we offer a lot of supports for caregivers. So, you know, we will link them to resources to help them figure out benefits and things. That's a big, big issue with caregivers, you know, like.
So you'll help walk them through.
Yes,
it.
Oh, walk wow. them through the benefit pieces with their loved ones, you know, link them to like, sometimes things are messier than we would think as caregivers. And I was a caregiver twice, so I do understand that.
Right.
And it's, you know, even for me, an educated person who works in the field, I was like, I had to figure this out.
Really?
And yeah. I was like, oh, there's a lot of hoops to go through.
Right.
And so we offer that assistance to people. We have a lot of great partners we work with on that. But then also we offer a lot of wellness things for them, right? Just so they can, you know, really understand how they're feeling, give them some coping strategies. Because a lot of times when you're a caregiver, everyone's asking about the person you're caring for and
right.
nobody ever asks about the caregiver,
right?
And then caregivers have a lot of feelings going on. So there could be guilt, you know, they could be angry, there could be shame, all those types of things. So we provide a lot of support for them. And then we have this thing called mystery trips where they sign up to go on a trip. They don't know where they're going. They just know they're going to go on a trip. And our director over there, Daisy Ball, and her team, they've done a great job because these people, they go everywhere. I mean, they are everywhere. They're in 1,000 Islands.
Wow.
They go to, you know, Shays Productions. They go out to, you know, Angola. They're at the parks, the beaches. They go wherever they decide they're going to go. And they're usually day trips, you know. And it's just a nice reprieve
right.
for them. And a lot of times the caregiver will go with the one that they're caring for.
Oh, okay.
You know,
all right.
We
but
found
not necessarily.
Not necessarily. They
okay.
don't have to.
All right.
But a lot of times they will.
Sure.
Or we've also found that the caregiver support is for caregivers who are looking out for each other.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's like they kind of know this person is dealing with stuff and like, oh, you know, they can need some assistance. And so they're kind of hanging out together and figuring this journey out
right.
know, together. So that's the one part of it. The second part is that we will be working with faith organizations within Buffalo and the First Ring suburbs so that they can develop their own caregiver hubs within their congregations, their synagogues, their mosques, or whatever. And like what makes sense for them. Because what we know is that places of worship tend to be first places where people reach out for help. And we know that just like us nonprofits, that places of worship are, you know, usually, you know, pretty tight on resources. And so we are looking to help them create this resource that they will maintain. The grant allowed for some a small stipend of some sort to be given to these faith organizations to start up their little caregiver program. So we're excited about that. In that component, we have what we call faith champions. And so that is a person that is identified by that place of worship as kind of like the go-to person in the congregation if you have questions. And then those individuals will go through a series of trainings. And there's also like a stipend associated with that. And the reason like I talk about the stipends, because I think it's so important that like, no, we can't pay people a lot of money, but you can give them something for dedicating this time. And a lot of times we ask people to volunteer for things. And some people are just very fortunate that they just can do it. But other people, they may want to, but, you know, maybe I do this other thing that I make a couple dollars at. And so I can't. And so it's a nice offset for people, right, to be able to do. So those are the two components. We're super excited about it. We had an initiative as it relates to mental health that we work with the faith partners with, and it was really great, very successful. So we really are looking forward to this one.
So, I mean, it's relatively, this is relatively new.
So we've had a form of our caregiver clubhouse through another grant that Wilson funded, which is our Exhale grant. So it's actually a continuation, the respite and the clubhouse are a continuation of that. The faith part is the new component.
So you haven't really had a chance to see how this is going to work out just yet?
Not for the caregiver, not for the
Do you have interested parties, though, I bet?
We have a few interested parties. We'll actually be doing an outreach to see if there are other members of the faith community that might be interested in learning more, or they would like something like this at, you know, their place of worship. And so, definitely. We'll be putting information up on our website so people can reach out to us.
And, you know, I was thinking, as you mentioned outreach, there are more than one there's more than one person I'm pretty sure that listens to this. Maybe not many more than that when I'm on the air. But what about that? Somebody has a congregation, or a synagogue, a local church, they can reach out?
They can reach out. They can go to our website if they want to send an email. They can call us at 716-852-5065 and speak directly to the receptionist. So you hit zero when you call and they will direct you to the right person. So yeah, we really are looking forward to engaging the community, all faith communities, to be able to give them this resource.
And so, and maybe just if you can, because I guess in a lot of ways we're in a very nebulous stage. We don't really know how it's going to look in these different different churches, but at the same time, there must be an idea of how it might transpire.
It's what support can be provided to caregivers, right? So that may be, maybe they're going to host, a bi-monthly coffee hour or something. Maybe they're going to do like a coffee cafe, kind of a break room type of thing, you know. And there's going to be resources in there, and maybe, you know, there'll be some workshops once a month or something. But it's a place, right, where caregivers can come, maybe just read a book. Like, I'm an avid reader, so anytime I can read a book, I'm like, yes. And so
I was just going to ask you what you're reading, but you're so busy, you probably aren't reading right now.
I'm not. You know what? I've had to take to audiobooks, honestly. So I'm listening to a book called Kin right now. It was like an Oprah's Book Club book. What I'm listening to. Yeah, I mean, but that's like a big deal. You know, I remember being a caregiver and just thinking like, if I could just like sit and read a book for like, you know, 20 minutes, you know, that makes the world a difference. And so maybe that's what this particular faith, you know, group wants to put together. You know, maybe it's like a reading corner with resources or something for them. You know, maybe someone else wants to be a little bit more adventuresome and they want to have like, you know, they're going to do their own respite, because we also know, right, churches have different levels of volunteers. So that's important as well. So I'm excited about it because it's going to look different in every place of worship. And I think that's the beauty of it, right, is really meeting people where they are and filling their needs according to what they need.
Yeah, so that's the, I suppose if somebody has a congregation, they're running a congregation, they're listening to this right now, they're maybe sparking their imagination on what's what's possible. Exactly. And the reality is, no matter what congregation, parish, synagogue, they have members who need the service, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a lot of people, I mean, interesting now, a lot of people are in what's known as the sandwich generation.
Okay.
So these are people that are caring for younger children, but also caring for maybe an older parent or older loved one. So they have it at both ends, you know, and that's a lot for people. And people just want some kind of reprieve, some kind of assistance or something like that.
And so then there is money. Yeah. I mean, and when we talk about resources in this case, we're talking about actually a financial resource of sorts that can help you get started.
And the whole point is, too, when we talked about community earlier,
right,
it's to help create these communities for support.
Sure, sure. You know what? My scribbled out notes, you can read them upside down, which probably can read better than mine. But I did write down, you have a ribbon cutting coming up here.
We do. So March 13th at 11 a.m., we'll be doing a ribbon cutting for the renovation of the neighborhood house, settlement house,
okay,
at 76 Orange Street. And it's really great. We were able to secure some money from the state of New York via DASNY and Empire State Development. And we were able to complete a first floor renovation of that site. So now we have the first floor renovated, a large portion of the second floor. There's just a little bit of the second floor left. But it has been really great. We were able to get the roof replaced, thanks to the Cumming Foundation. So we have done a lot of work over the past year in that building, and we're very, very proud of what it looks like and what we're able to offer to community.
You know, Chandra, as I've been talking to you here for the last hour, and we're kind of winding down here, but I'm it's a kind of a personal question of sorts, but I, you know, obviously this, you're the CEO now of BFNC, and so that's your profession, that's your career. At the same time, though, it sounds to me like going back 25 years when you started in this field, there was something inside you that prompted you to follow this. Can you share with us that? I mean, I'm just wondering if that might connect with some other people who are listening right now.
So I will just say, I've been in the field much longer than 25 years.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
But I've been at BFNC for 25 years,
yeah.
So a large portion of my career. At the end of the day, is you know, I grew up with I grew up the child of a teen mother who was married, got married very young, but was still a teen mother, and you know, watched my parents as they dealt with life challenges, but then also witnessed people around me in the neighborhood. And so I've always been inquisitive, like why? That was that why kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of grew up seeing things and kind of saying like, well, you know, there has to be some way to help people or can't life be better? And so, yeah, I was going to go to school and I was going to be a lawyer. And
you'd probably be pretty good at that too.
Yeah. And then I don't even know what happened with that. I went to school and I took psychology class.
Okay.
And it was like, wow. So how people's minds work have a lot to do with why they do. And you start to learn about things and it's hard to piece things together. And so then I just ended up in the human service field. And like I said, my first job was at People Inc. working in a group home. And I just knew that I wanted to make people's lives different. And I remember coming to BFNC 25 years ago. And the great thing about BFNC was like people, they looked like me that worked there. And I had never, I've been working, but I had never really seen like so many professionals of color working someplace. And I was like, this is pretty cool. And they get it. And they were able to relate to people that they serve based on our culture, you know? And I saw the impact that they had. I would not have been there as long as I've been there if it wasn't an impactful organization. It has been an organization that's provided me opportunity to learn, but to give back, right? And that's always been very important to me because there was a point when I was a young teen and my mom became a single mom. It was my brother and I, and life was difficult, you know? And I was the oldest, so I kind of recognized there were challenges. And we had a community of people to help. And I thought that that was very important. And I wouldn't be who I am today had it not been for all these people along the way, you know, family members, friends, teachers, you know, clergy members that saw something in this kid from Niagara Falls, New York, and said, you know, there's something there. And that has kind of been my career, you know, that someone has saw something in me and they kind of gave me an opportunity. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I ended up here.
That was an awesome answer. Oh, burying the lead. We should have put that right at the top. That is magnificent. That is for sure. Chandra, thanks for your time. I know you're tremendously busy doing what you're doing, but I love connecting with you. So thanks so very much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
Chandra Redford. She is the CEO of the Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers, or BFNC. My name's Jay Moran. This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.